Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and this is it for August of 2019. So long, August. Hello, September. September is right around the corner. In fact, by the time you get around to listening to this, it might be September. If so, happy September. I want to reflect on something because the very next episode that goes up will be Wednesday, September 4th, and that is my birthday. And I will be a 43-year-old man. And I never thought I would be a 43-year-old man. I didn't think I'd be a 12-year-old boy. I didn't think I would be a 16-year-old boy, an 18-year-old man. I didn't even know if anything was ever going to work out for me in my entire life, or if it was going to be a struggle the entire time because I didn't know how to get out of my own way. I didn't know how to become a better person. I didn't know that it was even possible to change everything about your reality, including you. Because the thing I was having the hardest time with in my reality was, in fact, me. The fact that I was a part of it. The fact that I had made so many choices up to a certain point and decided that those were the choices that I was stuck with. Decided that there wasn't any way forward except for the path that I had chosen, and I had to just stick it out because that's all I had. This is what was laid in front of me, and I have no choice but to walk it. I had no idea that you could buck the reins, that you could change your own destiny and your own path. I figured, I'm just a messed up person, and that is how I am, and that's who I am, and I'm stuck with that for the rest of my life. However short that's going to be. I don't believe that anymore. I still have times when I doubt my own abilities, I doubt how much I know about things, and I worry about whether or not my ability to make choices is good. But you know what? I'm alive. And I think I am able to recover from just about any situation, any bad decision, with a modicum of dignity, because I recognize that there is nothing more than this moment. That's all there is. All we have is this. All we have is now. And what we do with it. You can get upset about things that haven't happened yet. And you can bemoan your lot in life. But honestly, really, the only thing that you have is your experiences that have led you up to the current moment. And you can choose at any time to do something else. And I'm honestly kind of grateful that I figured that out, whether it took me 40 years to do it or not. Now, today on the show, we have the amazing, the wonderful Amy Dix, and we have the greatest conversation about the power of change, discovering that for yourself, and getting your shit together. I'm not going to tell you what happens in this conversation. Like usual, you're just going to have to listen to it. And you're really going to want to listen to it. So let's talk to Amy. Roll it! Well, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
How's it going? Nice to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you too.
So where are you at right now currently?
Okay, so I am in Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So I always, you know, somebody told me, actually my business partner told me this, and I always thought it was so funny. He lives in Arizona, and he's always like, so we're in different time zones, and, yeah, you know, you and I are on different time zones. And so he's always like, you're living in the future, and I'm living in the past. I'm like, yep. I like that.
Yeah, I you know, it's really interesting, the whole time zone connection thing. I mean, it's great to be able to have conversations with people from all over the place. Technology has really made things pretty great in a lot of ways. For all of the ways that it's failing us because we haven't figured out how to properly use it, it's really been pretty great at meeting people and allowing you to make connections in places where you maybe wouldn't have made connections before.
Right. Gosh, I love that conversation too, because like I always think about it in with social media. Like you can kind of have that same conversation about social media and like
Absolutely.
The connections. And yeah. And so, you know, sometimes I get talking about this and there'll be a few grumpy people who are like, ooh, I don't have a Facebook account or, you know, whatever. I refuse to do this and that.
Right.
And, you know, everybody can do, hey, everyone has a choice in life. Like you can choose to not do that and that's fine. But, you know, a lot of times like I'll hear like, oh, I just got off of whatever XYZ platform because it was just too negative for me.
Right.
And like, while I appreciate that, to a certain extent, too, I also just think, yeah, but, you know, what about all the good that it does? You know, like,
yeah,
what about all the great connections that you've been able to make or stay in contact with, you know, that you wouldn't normally be able to do? Like, what about all the good things that come of it, too? You know,
yeah.
So it's kind of like the same conversation.
Well, and the thing about social media is that it's completely modular. You can kind of pick how you integrate with it, what sort of things, which can be a bad thing too, that you can sort of create your own world. But that will tell you something about yourself and how you are at dealing with any kind of confrontation. Because if you see something that you disagree with and it upsets you to the point where you decide you just don't want to be involved, you know, maybe that tells you that you're not very good at that, and it's something you could improve on.
Oh, yes, 1,000%. And, you know, going back to like the comment of, or like what you were saying, like, oh, maybe you're not ready to deal with that or something upsets you. You know, there's like this really big secret, and the secret is that you can unfollow people.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually not a secret at all, you know, but it's just like, I think about that sometimes when people say those types of things or, oh, I can't stand XYZ. And I'm like, well, unfollow that person. Like, they'll never even know. Just unfollow them. If you don't want to see that, then you get the choice and you have the ability in 2019
yeah.
to make that decision, right? And like,
yeah.
You're right. Like, you can kind of create your own world. And, you know, I always think, man, my feed's awesome for the most part. I mean, there's some, you know, sometimes where I'm like, yeah, you know, but I've worked at it, you know, I've worked
yeah.
at like filtering certain, you know, beliefs and things out that, you know, maybe I'm just like not on board with, or like, if it's like extreme negativity, like,
yeah.
sorry, but peace out, you know, like, cause I
yeah.
don't want to see it.
You've got to have your line in the sand. I mean, accepting
yes.
other human beings and learning how to be a part of a society, it doesn't necessarily mean that the ultimate version of that is that you just let everybody do whatever they want and you're okay with it.
Right.
You know, you're allowed to have your anger and your disagreements. You're allowed to have those things, and you should have those things. And
yeah.
when you see people saying something that you vehemently disagree with, there's a couple of different things that you can do with that. You've got to know where your own personal line is. And sometimes,
yeah.
Sometimes examining your personal line, again, once you see something that bumps up against it, isn't a bad thing, because if you're feeling really good about where you are on something, it can reinforce that. But if you're not so sure about something, it can modify that. Not necessarily change it, but
completely, but modify it. And I think that's not a bad way to behave. Like, my mom is my friend on Facebook, but I don't follow her. You know?
And she doesn't know it. Unless yeah. she listens to this episode, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Because... She doesn't know. I mean, you know, that's one of those things too. It's like, I love my mom, and I had to come to terms with a couple of things where it was like, personality wise, our relationship could be problematic, but how do you maintain something that's important to you? If it's difficult, you figure it out.
Yes. Right. Like, it is a choice.
Yes, you know, completely.
And you made that choice, and it's important to know that you have that choice.
And choices are big. So everybody needs to understand their level of choice. But yes. You know, tell me a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Nice.
Yes, the middle of the United States. And I feel like, you know, when people hear that, if you're not familiar with the Midwest, when people hear that, they like automatically get this picture in their mind. Like, I grew up on this farm and raised cows and, you know, all this stuff, yeah. which was not my childhood at all. You know, Lincoln's is actually a city. I would actually call it a city. We actually things to do, you know, I didn't see a cow until I was like up close until, you know, after I graduated from college. So,
was it handing out the diplomas?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure some people think that that's not far from the truth, you know? but yeah, that's where I grew up. And, you know, just Nebraska's tagline, if you will, is the good life. And yeah. I think that is, it couldn't be more perfect. Like, I don't have any intention of ever moving back, but it is the good life. And it's a very simple life. And so I wouldn't change my childhood for anything, you know, even though I feel like I've evolved and grown beyond what I would want, you know, as far as like living in Nebraska now, it was the best childhood I could ever ask for.
Yeah. I grew up in Michigan, and so it's kind of, I completely get it. There's a lot of things to love. I've been through Nebraska several times.
Of course. You know, well, that's in Denver, right?
Yeah. So, oh, I've, yeah. yeah.
You've it's made a drive. I-80 that, track. Oh,
that
yeah.
Flat, flat.
Very, very flat.
So, what made you decide to, you know, up and move the shingle from Nebraska?
So, when I graduated from college, the company that hired me, my degree was in industrial distribution, which mm-hmm. is a very specific degree. So, the company that had hired me before I graduated was actually in Denver. So I was in your neck of the woods.
Nice.
And that was really easy for me. You know, it was a really easy move for me from Nebraska to our neighbor, Colorado. And I lived there for 10 years and I thought I was always going to live there. You know, I thought I had like found me and I thought I had found who I was, and man, Denver is dope and it is cool.
Yeah.
And I miss it in a lot of ways, but you know, I, you know, through some other avenues, I ended up in Jacksonville Beach, and man, I love the beach too, you know? So there's a lot to this country.
Yeah. But that's the thing that's beautiful is that when you go to all of these different places, if you're open to it, you can take things with you.
Yes.
Travel is very important because the cultures of different places, especially if you're willing to give in to it, can remind you not only how alike we are, but how those differences can really make us all interesting and fabulous.
Man, I love that comment. I think, you know, when I lived in Denver, I really saw that, like, diversity and progressiveness.
It's because nobody's from here.
Exactly. Nobody. And the people who are, like, they'll just tell you. You don't even have to, like, say, like, did you grow up here? Like, you just be like, oh, nice to meet you. And the person's like, oh, I'm great. I'm from Denver. I was born here. Like,
right. Oh, yeah, exactly.
I get it. You have a native bumper sticker on the back of your car. I get it, you know.
Yeah.
The five of you that are there.
Yes.
But, yeah. But, yeah, no, you're right. But, man, I appreciated that so much, you know, because I feel like it really opened up my world from Nebraska. I mean, again, like, I have nothing bad to say about Nebraska. It's just
right.
very...
It's different.
It's just, yeah, but it's also very same-same.
Yeah.
Which is maybe what makes it different, right?
Yeah.
so, but yeah, so I think that that was a great life lesson for me, living in Denver. And yes, travel can really open your eyes to... understand exactly. I mean, how you just said it was so beautiful, like how different we are, but yet how much, you know, but how we're all the same.
Yeah. So in all of that, what led you to Florida?
So I worked for this company, an electrical distributor, right out of college. Mm-hmm. Loved them. They were amazing. I thought I was just going to work for them forever and, you know, die. And then I tried to quit, if you will. Not try. Yeah, no, I did. I tried to quit them 3 times. And on the second time, they're like, no. Like, you know, they just made it really easy for me to stay. We'll just put it that way. But for me to have stayed with them, I had to move into what they considered the central region. So I had to move out of Denver. And, but, you know, I took it because I was so focused on climbing the corporate ladder and, you know, being the best in that company and blah, blah, blah. So I did it. And so I moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yet another move.
You being from, yeah. Yeah. And way different than what my perspective was going to be. I mean, I went from a really progressive city, uh-huh. and I'm not even talking politics there. I'm just using the terms.
Right.
But, you know, just a really progressive city to a very conconservative city.
Yes.
And it was different.
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. but there's a lot of aspects of Milwaukee that I really loved. I mean, if anyone listening like has not been to Milwaukee but understands Chicago, it is like an intimate Chicago.
Yes.
And that's how I felt about it. And it was cool and it was dope. And it has like really cool history and a river that runs down through downtown with big buildings that you can kayak on, like gorgeous summers.
Yeah.
Freezing winters.
Yeah.
For like 6 months.
Yes.
You know, so
those winters will teach you something about yourself too. It's there's a lot going on with those winters. There's so much isolation, so much stillness. It's kind of an eerie beauty.
Yes. Oh man, another really well said comment. Yes. one of the things, eerie beauty. That's awesome. One of the things that I realized is that. Truly, I think at that point in my life is when I really realized that depression is real.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying depression in myself. I'm just saying you could feel it.
Yes.
Like people are grouchy. People don't want to look at you. People in the grocery store parking lot, they have one goal, and it is to get from their car inside, and then from inside straight to their car, straight home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it was hard for me because I love like saying hi to random people and like,
right.
you know, high energy and like, what's up? Hey, like your shoes. Cool. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think truly at that point in my life which was not very long ago, I was there like 5 years ago. I really understood and I don't mean like understood it on a deep level. I just understood that depression is so real.
Yeah.
On a large scale.
And the thing about it too is that it affects, if you're depressed, it affects everyone around you in your life. And when a community is depressed, I mean, you're all just feeding each other just with, there's something in the air. It's like, you know, static electricity. It's almost like it paints the perception of an otherwise completely innocuous moment and makes it seem just a little off. Like you can, like you said, you can just feel it in the air.
Like, oh, yes, it's heavy.
When I first moved to Denver from Michigan, I had a lot of that to overcome. Because people would say hi and they would be friendly and I would be like, you know, eyes down. I don't have any money, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Don't ask. Yeah. Why are you talking to me right now?
Well, why would I look up when I'm walking? You know, somebody will take that as a challenge.
Like, yeah. That's so
it took a while for me to overcome that. And, you know, now on the very rare occasion that I go back, I try to take a little bit of that with me. I try to, you know, interact with people and say hi and like, let's have a conversation for a second, you know, at the grocery store. It is kind of strange, you know, these cultural things and the way that we sort of, talk to each other and feed each other and interact with each other and the things that we learn from those interactions on a subconscious level of how we're expected to behave based on what we're getting.
Yeah.
You know? What's the culture like in Florida?
Florida's dope, too. I mean, I live in a beach community, which is a little different, you know, than, like, living in Central Florida. Even, like, okay, so I live in Jacksonville. So I live in Jacksonville Beach. So, okay, let me just, like, explain this because I didn't even understand what this meant until I moved here. So Jacksonville's North Florida. So a lot of people call it South Georgia because we're so close to the Georgia border. So, you know, you think the South, there's a lot of that here, like the good and the bad, right? So that took a little while to adjust. There is some hate that still exists down here, which makes my skin crawl a little bit. It makes me really, really sad. But there's a lot of good. And Jacksonville is the largest city by square miles in the United States.
Yeah.
So it's huge and it's very, and it's getting more and more diverse, which I adore and I love. And, the beach community, like they call it the beaches, which, you know, it's kind of like four beaches, Atlantic Beach, Neptune Beach, Jacksonville Beach, and then Ponte Vedra Beach, which is,
that's a lot of beach.
Well, yeah, but they're not really that long, you know? It's like, it seems like a lot, but they're very, like, Neptune Beach is squeezed between Jacks and Atlantic, and it's probably, I don't know, maybe 10 blocks long, you know? So it's not, so it seems cool, but so, you know, you have that kind of chill beach vibe, and the cool thing about Jacks Beach is I feel like I just, like, found... My boyfriend always says, like, you have to stop saying this in public because otherwise you keep letting the secret out. But I feel like I found this, like, hidden gem in Jacks Beach because it's nothing like South Florida. Like, when people think that, like, I live, you know, whatever, at the beach in Florida, I think in their mind, they're thinking Miami.
Yeah.
Right? Which is South Florida, or Tampa, which is on the Gulf side, which is a different kind of vibe. But nobody really kind of comes to North Jacksonville on the Atlantic side because we don't get like the snowbirds that South Florida gets, right? Because we still get cold. Like in November, it will freeze a couple of nights. You know, and it gets pretty chilly. I mean, chilly for Florida.
Sure.
You know, November, December, where snowbirds, like, they don't, that's not what they're looking for.
Right.
You know, so we have kind of like a quiet community, not crowded beaches at all. And yeah, it's just like white sand beaches, but it's just a little secret.
Nice.
So it's a pretty chill vibe. Yeah.
So what about this book? Tell me about this book, because it's a pretty intense story. So let's just start at the beginning.
Okay. Back in 1859,
after that.
okay. How about this? April 2016. We'll start there.
Let's start there.
Okay. April 2016, my mom was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, which that's what spiraled everything and led to the book and led to the company, the Positive Life Company. So she was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. She had said something to me kind of during her time, which was had a huge impact on me, which was, I am not afraid to die. So she said those words to me. She said, Amy, I am not afraid to die. And I remember it so very vividly. And I'm sure I will remember it for the rest of my life. And, you know, in that moment, I thought, like, wow, like, you're braver than I am. I mean, this woman knew she was dying. I mean, that was the realistic piece of it, you know, is that she was dying. I mean, she had it's called glioblastoma, and if you get diagnosed with glioblastoma, there is 100% chance that it will come back. So there is no, like, you can go through treatment and do all that other stuff, but it's always going to come back, right? Yeah. So their survival rate is actually, you know, there is no survival rate. It's mainly just like they judge it on a 5-year scale. And even then it's so, I'm not going to quote because I don't know the stats, but even then it's just so minuscule. Like, even the people that will live past 5 years, let alone a year. So, I mean, the reality is that she was dying. And, you know, she was this incredible, insanely positive woman. And there was a moment, you know, I live in Florida. Okay. My parents are still in Nebraska. So I would fly back and forth between Florida and Nebraska.
Yeah.
And there was this moment, and she was in hospice at this point. And I thought to myself, you know, man, she's in hospice. We were maybe six months into this. If there's like any thing that I need to like glean from this insanely happy, positive woman, like, now's the time to ask like the questions that I want to ask, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we're running out of time, Amy, like, get your shit together, basically.
Yeah.
And, so I came up with like this list of questions, and I actually just found this in my, I had no idea that I even still had it, which was such a gem to find, but I just found it in my desk drawer, I don't know, maybe like 6 months ago here in my office at the house. And I was like, no way, that's insane. I didn't even know I still had this little sheet of paper, but I had a list of questions. And so I went that particular trip home. That was my like thing. I was going to do this. And my dear friend Anne, she had gave me this advice, and I like love sharing this advice, because if anyone ever catches themselves in a similar situation where their loved one is dying, I think that this was some of the best advice I got, which was, you need to record your conversations. And something I would have never thought about.
Yeah.
And she even said, she was like, you're going to forget things. And I was like, and when you're in the moment, you don't think you're going to forget all these conversations that you have with them. You just don't think you will, but you do.
Yeah.
And there's just so much other stimuli that's happening. There's so many other emotions going on. There's so many visitors coming in and out. Like, you're just going to forget. And so that's what I did. I went back with this sheet of paper with all these questions. I went to her hospice room, like straight from the airport. I opened up my laptop. I sat next to her she was laying on the bed, and I started recording. And I asked her this, and I have to go back to the recording. It's really hard to listen to, but I need to go back to the recording. And I asked her a question. I can't remember what it was. But very quickly I realized that her cognitive level was, I mean, diminishing, and very, very quickly. Like, there really was no conversation to have, because she got to a point she couldn't really have conversations anymore.
Yeah.
She had cancer in the brain. I mean, it was just kind of, you know, affected, you know, everything. So including her communication. And so that was kind of it. And then I looked at this piece of paper, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try one more time. And so the next question I asked was, Mom, what advice do you have for people so that they can live a more positive life like you? And she was so, again, her communicative style was so funny at that point, because she, she was just like very matter of fact and very much like one word answers, which is why it wasn't a conversation, you know? Right. But in this, so then she goes, I don't know, Amy, like almost like she was annoyed. She's like, I don't know, Amy, I either believe you are or you aren't. And that was it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then and I mean, and that was it. I didn't even think twice about it at that time, right? It wasn't until like I went back to the recordings and listened to it, and it made me laugh a little bit. And but it then made me think, like, I wonder if that's true. You know?
Is she on to something?
Yeah, is she on to something? Like, hey, this woman dying, does she know something that we don't know? And then from there, that's what led to the book, is because then I almost became obsessed with studying positivity and positive psychology and understanding happiness and the science of happiness. And, you know, and so then I started doing all this research, and then I thought, I'm going to write a book on this. I'd previously written another book, which is totally a different topic. It has nothing to do with any of this. But, so I went to my publisher and I'm like, hey, I got an idea for another book. And he's like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And, so I was like, but I want to weave my mom's story in with the research. And that was it. And then that's how it all came together. And, you know, at the time I thought it was a really good idea to like get going and like have this thing done before she died. Cause I'm like, mom, I'm going to show you, you're going to be able to see this book. I mean, that did not happen. She died like 2 months after that. And, so that never happened, but even if it did, I don't think she would have understood it at that point, or I don't think she would have understood like really what was going on. But you know, we got it released. Maybe 6 or so months after she had passed. And then, that was it. Started the Positive Life Company with another guy out of Arizona, and just became kind of like my, like, let's have this conversation, people.
Yeah.
Like, the world's in chaos, so let's start talking about it instead of, like, you know, hiding behind it.
Well, is that something that you've always had as far as being able to have an emotional intelligence about the things that are happening to you and around you?
Well, the way you phrased that question is interesting, because the way I thought you were going to ask that question was different. I think my emotional intelligence has certainly increased over the last probably 5 years of my life, and understanding like my feelings and why I'm feeling a certain way and where that comes from, and, you know, and how to express those things to other people. I've probably always had a bit of, I don't think this is the right word, but I think you'll kind of get it, like maturity to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people are always like, oh, you're wise beyond your years, you know, whatever. So I think I've always kind of had that. But, you know, I grew up in a house where we didn't share feelings. We didn't say, I love you. That didn't mean we didn't love each other.
Right. But there was an understanding there.
Yeah. And it wasn't really until my mom died that it was like, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's like, you can't
right.
say it enough, you
yeah.
know? So, yeah. I think her death definitely increased my emotional intelligence. And I think just some things that were happening in my life a few years kind of leading up to that really kind of inside, maybe I had decent emotional intelligence. But I think expressing that is a different thing.
Yeah. No, it certainly
right?
is.
Yeah.
But with what you were talking about there, you know, there's, and again, I understand conversationally there, especially after the fact, it's easier to be more, direct about something. But, you know, the way that you discuss it, like, you know, my mom went through this, she got a diagnosis. You know, I understand that there was probably some grief and some other things that needed to be addressed through that. But the other piece of that I heard that really I think is the one that I find more interesting is the part where you had decided that you were going to try to document some things. You were going to get the advice. You were going to, you know, suck the marrow out of the bones of these last moments. You had the presence of mind to do that.
Yes, and I would say that that is not probably common.
Yeah.
And I would tell this story to kind of help illustrate it, which I write about this story in the book, so I don't, so it's okay to like share publicly, which is about my brother, and he doesn't mind me sharing the story, but we were very opposite in this, in the fact, like, when he came back, you know, one of the first times, she also had that same conversation with him, the I am not afraid to die conversation, and it went very differently. And I was in the room at the time, and I mean, it was probably one of the saddest moments for me, because he took it as, he goes, oh, mom, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about, like, what you want to do for your 75th birthday.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom was 59 years old, you know, so at the time. So that's very, and from his perspective, like, you want to talk about, like, positivity, right? Like, I'm not saying you do, but I'm just saying in general, like, people always want to talk about, like, how do you be positive? In one sense, people can say, and what my brother thought was, well, I'm just thinking positively.
Right.
Well, there's a difference between being positive and being realistic.
Yes.
And sometimes you have to be realistic before you can come back to positivity. And that is something that did not happen with him until, I mean, very much later on, and maybe even a little bit after, you know, her death. And he just said to me at one point, we were talking about it when I was asking if I could share it in the book, and he goes, you know, I just don't think I was emotionally strong enough to handle it at that point.
Right. Yeah.
And I think and that's okay, by the way. Like,
completely
judging that. Yeah. It's just the difference between how two people handled it, you know? And like, and then I watched my mom shut down with him. And that's the sad part, because she was so clear and she knew what was going on. So for him to not accept it and accept that conversation really hurt her. And I think that that's what made me sad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that can be a really difficult situation. I mean, it sounds like your mom had a pretty high level of stoicism. Was she always like that?
Yeah, so that's an interesting observation. You know, my mom dealt with a lot of loss in her life. So when she was a young girl, she lost her grandmother to pancreatic cancer. When she was a senior in high school, she was with her mom when her mom took her last breath from died of pancreatic cancer, and she lost both of her brothers to pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
So, and it was, there's five siblings. So it's my mom, her two older brothers who both died of pancreatic, you know, who died of cancer, and then her twin sister, and then her younger sister.
That's rough.
And so, yeah, that's, I mean, hey, we all deal with, I get it, you know, but I think the fact that she lost so many people so close to her, right?
Yeah.
That it had enough of an effect on her that she was like, again, I mean, I think I started this conversation saying she was like insanely happy and positive. She was, but she was also very real because she saw all that happen, you know, and she had to go through that. So yes, as far as I knew her, I don't think her whole life she was like that. I think my dad really helped her along too, like in their relationship early on. But as I knew her, she was always very matter of fact. And like, in that sense, like, and I should say, not necessarily matter of fact, very real. Like, she always had a very good grasp on, like, what was really happening in reality. And, like, sometimes she would get sad, and now I steal this phrase from her because I, you know, at the time I just thought it was funny, but now I'm like, oh, God, that's so good, is when she would start to miss her brothers, like, she would just start crying.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she'd have a moment, and that happens. Like, you're just like, ah, and then you just start crying. Like, no, not right now. But she would go, I'm just feeling weepy right now. And I always thought that was just like a really cute way to be like, you know what? I'm just sad right now, but that's okay. But it was like, but it's okay.
Yeah.
She's sad, but it's okay. Like, in this moment, she feels weepy, meaning yeah. she feels sad. But it's just in this moment, and here's why. And she would always say, why? You know, just feeling really weepy right now. I'm just missing your Uncle Steve, you know, right. or I'm just thinking yeah. about Terry.
Qualifying
whatever,
it.
You know, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think she did have, you know, a pretty good grasp on that.
I mean, that sounds like something we could all aspire to. I mean, I remember I had kind of made peace with a lot of things in my life, as far as like the people that I was losing and how I was losing them. It's one of those things that you sort of do develop an understanding of death and the reality of death. If you start to see, you know, enough of it, I guess.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
depending on who you are, depends on how much is enough. Sometimes once, that's enough. That's enough right. death for me.
Sure.
But, you know, I do remember feeling a little bit of that. You know, when I went and visited, my two grandmothers when they were dying. Mm-hmm. The one I was there when she died, and it was a room full of people. All of her kids. She had a million kids, and then grandkids and everybody. And she was there, yeah. and you know, and we were all kind of reacting to it differently.
Yes.
And I remember seeing this woman just kind of going, you know, here we are. I'm glad you're all here, and I think I'm gonna go now.
Yeah.
And yeah. watching the people react differently.
Interesting.
You know, there really wasn't a bad way to do it because it's all so right. personal, but
so true.
But yeah, it was a lesson for me. And you know, well, I mean, that's the kind of relationship I want to have with this. I want to be able to be comfortable that when it comes time, I'm not in denial about
yes.
it.
Yes,
and
right.
you know, let's make peace with it, and let's help everyone around me who's going to have to deal with the grief after I'm gone. What can I do to minimize that grief so that they at least know, you know, whatever happens from this point forward, I'm not a part of the equation. So
yes.
whatever grief you've got to go through is yours. And I hope that you're strong enough to handle it.
Yes. Oh, that is so good. I don't want to interrupt you if you were still going.
No,
on
go
one.
Ahead.
There, you just reminded me of this other story. Which was, you know, at one point, because you said, what was your last sentence? I want to make sure that you're just strong enough to go on without me. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Something along those lines?
Something along those lines, yeah.
Okay, so I remember one time, she was maybe 3 or 4 months. She lived for 8 months, just to kind of give you a timeline.
Yeah.
So 3 or 4 months, you know, after she was diagnosed. Anyway, I was sitting at the foot of her bed, and it was just me and her. Like, there was all these people in there and, like, my family. And then all of a sudden, like, it was just me and her. I don't even know. Like, everyone just left. I don't even know. But, and I just, like, I had this question, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to get it out. Like, I was already choked up and, like, crying, but I just, like, wanted to see what she would say. And I asked her, I said, Mom, how did I say it? Mom, like, you lost your mom. Like, how do I go on after you die? How am I going to continue? And I was just, like, losing it, right? Like,
yeah.
I even choked up about it, just, like, remembering the moment.
You just gave me chills.
Yeah, and she just said, oh, Amy, you're strong. You just do. And
yeah.
that was it. And I was like, I don't really know about that. Like, in that moment, I was like, I don't really think so. You know? But she, you know, now I'm how far removed? She died in December of 2016. So, you know, do the math. A year and a half.
Yeah.
Right? Ish? No. Whatever. 2 years. See,
yeah.
Now it's going to be three. It's going to be 3 years. Okay. So now we're 2.5 years past. And what she said is so true. It's so true. It's like, you just do.
Yeah.
Like, she was kind of like, I don't know how I did it, but you just do. And it's true. You just figure it out and you do. And it's going to be okay. I think, you know, that's kind of like what's her way of saying, like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. I think that it takes a certain level of day to day willingness to try, not necessarily strength, although that is a part of it, but really it just comes down to the idea that when you're dealing with something as profound as grief and loss, and all of the shit that comes with it, when you have all of that on you, you can make a few decisions on how you're going to handle it and what would be best for you. But typically, I always think that it's best to keep moving.
Yes.
Just keep moving. And it doesn't matter if you're good at it. It doesn't matter if you're having a good day, if you're distracted. If you have things to do, do those things. Remind yourself that you're still alive and you still have things to do.
Yes.
So what did you pour yourself into?
Wow, good question. I probably poured myself into this book and into the company and into spreading the message.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of became like cathartic for me. And then, you know, from there it became, I started doing motivational keynotes and telling the story that way. And, you know, and that's really, every time I get to share the message from stage, it's just like, I get a feeling that I can't even describe. And it's not really so much about me. It's the story and the lessons, you know.
Yeah.
It's about the audience and how, you know, and it's really all about how, you know, the science of happiness and how to be positive or whatever. But interwoven, similar to the book, is like the story. And it's just like, I feel like, you know, when I do sometimes feel, sad or weepy, I'll say, as she said, then I remind myself of, you know, these people in our community, in the positive life community, and like, we're all after the same goal in life.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all support and love the message of positivity, you know, and we're all trying to make a difference in the world. And I think like when we understand that and can come together, like as the masses and just keep talking about it, then
yes,
we can, you know, make a bigger difference.
I think the thing that throws a lot of people off is that they see the positivity movement as a denial. But that's because they're not really looking at it. I mean, there's really so much to be grateful for on any given day, no matter what your situation is. But it's not a matter of ignoring the things that need fixing or the things that are wrong. It's a matter of finding the things that are working and appreciating them.
Yes.
Because there's always something.
There's always something. I just sent somebody this quote today, but because they had a really bad day yesterday, and and he was like, even him talking to me about his bad day, he had said something in that moment, like, you know, but it's fine. And then he said something like kind of like realistic and positive. And I was like, yes, this is why I love you. And so I sent him this quote today, and it's something along the lines of like, you can't always have a good day, but when you have a bad day, you can approach it with a good attitude.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah. And that's how I felt like, that's how I felt he handled the situation last night when I was talking to him, was, you know, it was kind of like, he did kind of have a, you know, not best day, but man, cool. He just made one, like he just said one sentence in there. I don't even know if he realized he did it. He just said one sentence in there and then he kept rolling about, you know, all this other stuff that, you know, was not so great.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I caught it and I was like, you know what? That's what makes you, happens to be my boyfriend, but I was like, that's what makes you such an amazing person, is that you found that little nugget. I don't even know if you realized it, but you did. You found that little nugget and all the stuff that just, you know, came crashing down on you today. Like, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always an opportunity to, you know, take everything that you have gone through in the day. If it was a day where everything just went sideways and nothing worked out, the only part of that you have any control over at all is your reaction to those things.
Yes. Yeah.
So being able to teach yourself how to self-correct and how to keep yourself from feeling worse, because, I mean, bad things are going to happen and you're going to feel bad. And that's just part of our lives. It's in us for a reason. Nothing can ever always be good, but
of course
you can always have an understanding of your reaction to it. And sometimes yes. that's enough to minimize the damage to keep you moving.
It's so true. I people always ask me like, how do I define positivity? And it's kind of evolved over time, but, now I just kind of say, you know, it's the power to use your thoughts to change how you feel.
Yes.
Power to use your thoughts to change how you feel, and which is exactly what you were just saying. And it kind of comes full circle to like what we were talking about, like in the very beginning of this, which was we all have a choice.
Yeah.
And it's a choice, but it's a choice that you have to make. Well, you don't have to make it. It's a choice you get to make every single day.
You get to make it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a process, though, and it can be very difficult, because if you're a person who's been allowed to live an entire lifetime with that kind of wiring, it gets in there deep, and that can be hard to rip out, and it's going to take some help. It's going to take some, you know, maybe some coaching even, some a therapist, a more enlightened friend, and an interest in changing. Ultimately, that's what it's going to take.
Yes, that was good. Yes.
That's why I think that having conversations like this and getting it out there that there's a lot of different ways to be better. And there are a lot of different approaches. But ultimately, you just got to find something that's going to work for you instead of, you know, continuing to bang your face against the wall and complaining about the wall.
Right. That's awesome. Yes, I agree.
Well, okay. This has been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to finish the book, and I'm really excited about everything that comes next. And thanks for talking to me today.
Hey, thank you. And thank you for all you do, too, with your message. It's just so powerful. So I just wanted to thank you as well.
Thank you. And there we have it, August, in the books, done. We survived it, people. If you want to know how I got this conversation put together, go over to podcastguests.com. They're there to help you find amazing people relevant to what it is you're talking about. It worked for me, it can work for you. The other thing that can work for you is going to thepositivelifeco.com. and choosing the 5-day positivity challenge. It's a way that they are able to show how everyday men and women from all over the world are living a more positive life filled with happiness, excitement, and joy. I'm going to do it. I think you should do it. And we should compare notes. Because ultimately, what do you got to lose? Let's try to be happy if we can. And as always, don't kill yourselves out there.